Menachem Poznanski is the director of The Living Room. And The Living Room, as it's described on more than one website, embraces recovering addicts and helps them re-enter mainstream society. It may be shocking, as I mentioned earlier, to many people listening, that we even need an institution, a program like this in our community. But we'll hear in a moment why it is so necessary. Also, The Living Room is associated with other very important youth-oriented programs and institutions in our community that help with other situations, similar and other situations that young men and young women in our community are going through. He is director of The Living Room, Menachem Poznanski. A pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for the privilege of being here.
A pleasure. How long have you been director of The Living Room?
We're actually coming up on 20 years, May 26th.
And was it preceded by anything? Did you work professionally in this area of social work, in this area of community before taking this position?
Yeah, I've done a lot of communal work. I worked for a long time with Madrigos, which is a youth organization in the Five Towns.
They were around even then?
Yeah, we opened Madrigos in like 2002, 2003 maybe. Something like that.
So over 20 years.
And I also worked in Jewish Family Services for a period of time in Long Island and some other stuff.
20 years, by the way, in any position in the Jewish world, especially Jewish communal organizational life, is quite the exception these days. I mean, in my situation, people already left since I've already put in 40 years. But but in normal situations, when you're at 20, it may raise some eyebrows, frankly.
Yeah, I 5 years ago, I said to my colleague, Gittel Fulman, who's like my partner of mine, in The Living Room, and I said, I think at 20, I don't think we're going to be able to keep going, but I don't think we're going to be able to slow down, actually.
Well, from what I hear, you have no choice but to not slow down.
Yeah.
And it's funny, and this is why I said what I said to the audience earlier. There are a lot of programs that you're familiar with and a lot of good work that's been, you've already mentioned Madrigos as an example, and you have a lot of colleagues out there doing, again, sometimes different and sometimes similar work to what you're doing, right? I think that would be a safe way of putting it.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of people in this audience here, New York, New Jersey area, and around the world are frankly a bit stunned already that there has to be those many services and so many organizations in our community to address the types of needs that you're addressing. And by the way, that comes with, you know, fundraising campaigns and online efforts that are, you know, really in our face throughout the year.
Right.
And you know, from programs that deal with really serious stuff, and it's still hard for people in the community to believe that we need programs like yours to this extent.
Yeah, I mean, the entire, like, I guess, spectrum of intervention, you know, a lot of people perceive the work that we do in particular is kind of like youth particularly organized. We are targeting like a young adult population, but that's like 18 to 35. Right. In fact, the work that we do, our median age is probably early 20s.
Includes married people as well?
Yeah, we have 65 couples that are currently in the TLR population across all five of our centers.
And that's because the majority of those couples are in similar situations to their spouses, or they're just support spouses?
No, those are, I mean, it's a mixture, but the majority of it is our individuals that are, I mean, listen, in the Jewish community, the people that are most likely to encounter issues around substance abuse are really in that median age of their early 20s, or sometimes like at an older age in their 30s, or sometimes in the 50s. There's like different catch groups that kind of like really where substance abuse kind of develops from a small problem to becoming a more significant life problem. So normally when people think about drug use, they think about like young kids doing risky things.
College campuses, all that.
Right, exactly. So, but a lot of times the people that really encounter addiction in its most like manifest form, as opposed to just like unruly substance abuse, are people that have not been able to move past that. So therefore you're talking about people that are really post college age or newly married age, people that have attempted to try to reduce their substance use but have not been able to. And part of what happens in the phenomenon of addiction is that the more you try to control it, the worse it gets.
Really?
When you have addiction, right? Yeah. Because people that, you know, many people fall into a pattern of unhealthy living in a variety of areas of their lives. But then they encounter a problem, and then they usually moderate it. They either step away or do it less in order so that it doesn't impact their lives. They either hold on to it and kind of manage it, or they let it go. Hopefully they let it go. For a lot of people, which is really like the entire phenomenon of addiction itself, they, for whatever reason, for a variety of reasons, they can't let it go. And what happens is the entire mechanism of addiction is a process where the brain becomes habituated to the idea that it can't live without a certain substance.
Right.
There's nothing better to prove to the brain that you can't live without it than trying to stop and then not being successful.
I mean, those who've been on diets, you know, that could certainly relate to this. Obviously,
right, exactly.
Not as serious as... Now, you're director of The Living Room.
Right.
Who and when do you get a call? Who calls you and when do they call you?
So people that are coming to The Living Room, thank God, are people that are actively seeking help, which is one of the great joys and privileges of my life. We're working with individuals that have identified a problem and then realize that they want to get well and that they're struggling to really cope. So it's usually either individuals because, you know, there's a word on the street that if you're a young adult Jewish person and you're looking to be clean and struggling, you can come to The Living Room and find that. But more often than that, it's clinicians, treatment centers. You know, there's a plethora of treatment centers treating the Jewish community. And when people come home, right, whether it's here in New York and Muncie and the Five Towns in Brooklyn or in the Southern Jersey area or in South Florida and Hollywood, where our five locations are, they need somewhere to go. They need resources. They need community. Just like every Jewish person, every frum person wants to have a shul to be part of, wants to have a community to be part of, wants to feel like they're part of something. Someone that's coming out of a drug rehab needs that. And they're not going to find that in shul for a variety of reasons. First of all, people that are there don't necessarily understand what they've been through.
Right. Can't relate to it.
And there's also a lot of times, there's a lot of barriers
stigma
to help them get there. So part of what we do, it's not all of what we do, but part of what we do is creating a space for them, a congregation, so to speak, for them to come to,
a
place
room
to be part of. Yes. And that's what it's meant to be. It's
five locations.
Yeah.
That's scary when you think about it.
It's so, you know, in the last, it's really, and that's really manifested since COVID. That's really like since COVID. I mean, in 2020, we had a primary location in Brooklyn and two satellite offices, one in the Five Towns and one in Muncie, that were operating on a very low scale. But in the time since, it's really like, I mean, as much as you talk about communal awareness of addiction, it's really only gotten much more significant over time. Whereas
the addiction or the awareness?
Yeah, the addiction.
Both.
The both. The people that are seeking help, meaning, you know, sometimes people say things like, I wish you went a business, which I think to some degree has truth to it. But there's also a truth that like, well, if I'm in business, it's because people want to get well. The reality is that for the last 10 years has been not only in the Jewish community, but we know in the broader secular community, you know, substance abuse has exploded and it's very, very prominent. And that's going to have an effect. And where we are right now in the world is we are on the I don't know, hopefully the tail end of that, but we're on the other end of that process. And what you have is a lot of people that have been grappling with greater access to things like marijuana, an explosion of normalization of heavy alcohol use, and then also kind of trickling in the normalization of other substance use. And inherently, anytime you have substance use in the population, you're going to have 10-20% of the population that's not going to do well with that.
Right.
I mean, you have people that can use drugs, and either it works, they're fine. They can use drugs recreationally, they're fine, or they encounter consequences and they stop. But then there's always going to be a segment of the population, and that's true throughout history, that is not able to stop on their own. Right.
They can't handle it.
For a variety of reasons. Some of it because of underlying traumas, a lot of it because of underlying traumas that are not addressed, and it's very difficult for a variety of reasons to be able to cope with one's self without kind of addressing those underlying things, but also other reasons, other biological reasons, or behavior reasons or backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera.
So if one does not have that background or those reasons, they got to consider themselves lucky.
Yeah, sure.
Well,
absolutely. I mean, people that have the capacity to, you know, they make a bad choice, they make a string of bad choices, and then come to a moment of inflection and realize like, oh, wow, I really need to change that, and then are able to just change it.
Right.
That's the there's inherent character in that that we have to be feel right. fortunate.
Yeah, about. But I was saying even beyond that, a young person who finds marijuana or alcohol revolting,
right,
to a degree, they're lucky.
Yeah, sure.
They're never really attracted to it.
Right, negative experience. Yeah, actually, it's interesting. Early encounters with substances have a significant effect on the possibility of developing addiction later on. Meaning, earliest experiences. Yeah, there's some interesting like studies around that, particularly around a gambling addiction. There's actually a very very acute kind of data that shows that like an early, like if someone has like a really good, so to speak, experience with gambling at a very young age, they're much more likely to develop a gambling addiction later on because their brain associates it a certain way.
Well, and the opposite. I would think that if somebody has a really bad drug experience as right. a teenager,
right.
it could internally scare them off for the rest of their lives.
Or at least give them a sense of caution about
right.
it. Right, definitely. Yeah. And that's luck.
I have a couple of stories about that, not personally. I'm talking about people in our community who have shared experiences like that with me, where yeah. they thank God that the experience they had as a teenager was so detrimental and terrible that it right. really helped them get through their adult years.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that has to do with like our awareness of like brain chemistry and right. the process of like neural associations and how that plays into these things.
Menachem Poznanski is here. He's director of The Living Room, which has been in existence for how many years?
20 years.
20 years. Your colleagues, in order to carry out these tasks and these assignments of trying to help young men and young women in our community, need to be educated in what way? What degrees do they have? What expertise do they have? Who do you associate with that can relate to the type of work you're doing?
So we have a mixture of staff with different backgrounds. We have clinical social workers. That's part of our staff. Some are certified peer advocates, which are mostly individuals that have encountered in one way or another what it's like to experience issues around substance abuse, stuff like that, and then utilize that experience and then gain certification to be able to work with people. And then there's a variety of other like professionals that are necessary on our team that has to do with creating a warm and loving environment, creating an environment that people want to be a part of, creating a space that people want to feel like they're loved.
And what is that space like? I mean, I would assume that some of the people who you're asked to save, so to speak, have to go through some serious treatment, right? Have to be admitted into some serious treatment program, I would guess.
Yes.
Can someone who's a Sabbath observer and kosher eater find a program like that in this country right now?
Yeah, there's a variety of really great programs. Thank God that we have the privilege
to work
with.
That are familiar with the Orthodox community.
Yeah, I mean, different programs at different levels. Right. I mean, there are some Jewish programs, right. And there are many programs that cater to the Orthodox community. Some of that means catering to kosher food, right. But
once they're through that process,
yeah.
What is the living room? When you said you want to create an environment where everyone will feel comfortable, and the living room obviously is a name that invites comfort and camaraderie.
Hopefully.
Right. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons you named it that.
That's the goal.
But how does it manifest itself? Are these gatherings that go on, you know, for young men and young women in our community in different places, informally, formal? Is it a program, a Shabbaton? Like, what happens?
Oh, so what we do is we blend like three different things, essentially. One is intermittent programming that happens. We do intensive retreats twice a year. We do a series of events and different types of gatherings to get together. Those are more broad and significant in scale. Then we have regular weekly gatherings in each of our areas, twice a week in each location, where people can have dinner and there's a group and a class. It's you know, a warm place to be and to be able to see your friends. And then there's like the other work of TLR, which is the living room. Mm-hmm. We call it TLR. That kind of operates under the surface, which is kind of the underlying community building work that we do, which includes meeting with individuals who are new to recovery, who are coming out of treatment, to identify all the other areas of their lives. One of the things that it's important to make this point. One of the things that we have identified over the last 20 years, anyone who's familiar with the addiction space knows like the success rates in rehabs are like horrible, 5% success rates in addiction, which has not played itself out. In
all addictions across the board?
That's like a number that's thrown out, but yeah, like it's very, very low. The likelihood of people achieving long-term recovery from addiction is very, very low.
And those programs are very expensive.
Extremely expensive, like very, very expensive.
You're paying for a 5% chance?
Yeah. I mean, what we've demonstrated, and this is reflective not only in the work that the Living Room does, but the Living Room is now also like recognized by New York State as a recovery youth clubhouse, and there's a general movement to create youth clubhouses and recovery clubhouses around around the country. Because one of the things that was identified is the reason people don't do well is because the initial phase of treatment, like rehab, is really only a head start to help the person get well. And that really, in order for them to get well...
So it is important. It's just it's vital. Piece.
It's just one piece of the puzzle. And then there's layers of reasons that people ended up where they ended up, some of it being underlying trauma, et cetera, that has to be addressed in therapy. But a lot of it has to do with many other things.
So it's much more than 5%. It just has to be viewed as a much bigger picture. That's one little piece of the whole process.
Right. Meaning if you looked at like the percentage of success, let's say like in the living room,
right?
So the percentage of success for people that come out of treatment and engage resources and are given a little bit of support to get a job and to find a place to live and to build relationships, it's much more. It's been closer between 60 and 70%.
Oh, now we're talking.
5-year recovery rates, which is amazing. And then the question also is how you measure success also. What does success look like? Like if the person was previously living very dysfunctionally and using a lot of drugs, and then they change their lives and continue to struggle with drugs, but now are able to like get a job and go to school and they intermittently struggle, there is success in that as well. So when you start measuring what success looks like for people that struggle with addiction, you know, it kind of varies. So part of what the Living Room is focused on is probably like 80% of our time is trying to identify and then fill those gaps.
And just because I, you know, humor me for a moment, because you know that there was a bit of confusion when you were first introduced to me, because I was somewhat familiar with Our Place. What is the relationship between Our Place and the Living Room?
So Our Place is Our Place in, of New York is the parent organization of the Living Room. And then we, you know, what Our Place is best known for is their flagship program, which is their boys and girls drop-in center in Brooklyn, which
is literally if someone feels the need
for youth, it's for specifically for youth 16 to 21.
And that's to prevent them from acting in a homeless manner or to, you know, if they're seeking any type of help or any type of problems they may have at home, they could turn to somebody on their staff.
It's a risk reduction kind of like endeavor within the journey. You know, we say like the only constant in Our Place and the Living Room is growth. We're always looking to identify areas that are not being filled. We never try to replicate services that are occurring, but we always try to identify the services that are needed in the Living Room and the other programs that we have in Our Place called Our Village, for example, which is a community of homes for men that are coming out of treatment, a residential program. Is when we identify a need, we try to fill that need. And one of the things that Our Place noticed was that people were coming out of treatment. I mean, this wasn't only their clientele, but their clientele as well. They would work to get somebody to go to Eretz Yisrael after high school who had been struggling. And then they come back and they're doing really well, but there's still a persistent drug addiction. And then they would go to drug treatment and then they would come back and they had nowhere to go. They had no community to be a part of. And that's really how the Living Room was born 20 years ago.
Wow.
It's like, well, we have to do something.
Who supports the Living Room?
We get some foundation money, the couple foundations that give us money. New York State gives us a nice amount of money every month, New York State Oasis, and then private donors who are kind enough to donate to us. We actually had last night a really beautiful dinner with kind of like the really active donor base of Our Place, and had an opportunity to interact with them, with the staff and the donors. It was really, really wonderful. Some really remarkable people that I see that they identify the need and they recognize what we're trying to do.
Regular community people.
Yeah, regular.
It's amazing what a regular person can do. Right? and I mean that seriously. And if someone listening right now wanted to support the Living Room, is there a website or somewhere where you can direct them?
Yeah, there's ourplaceny.org is the overall Our Place website. And then tlrfamily.org is specifically the TLR website.
And what you just said, growth is important to both institutions, yours being under the umbrella of Our Place. I don't know. I was first introduced to this, now I could really say decades ago, in terms of the work that's being done by you and your colleagues. Are there that many more people that are being served on a regular basis? Obviously, the numbers collectively are gargantuan. I get it, because you've been doing this for so many years. But I don't know, if I walked in and there were 30 people there on a typical night, you know, back then, is it a similar type of number or much more now?
Yeah, the numbers have grown significantly.
There could be 100 people there.
Well, we have five centers. There's about there's between 45 and 65 active members in any of those locations. We serve about 300 people a month. There's a lot of people, you know, meaning the Jewish people, thank God, do very well, and we help the Orthodox community helps people that are in need really, really well. And we do that, and we should be admired for that. We do a great job. But there's always going to be a segment of the population that struggles. People say things like, I wish he went out of business, which is nice, but I also wish like Mashiach came. Like the reality is that human beings encounter mental health challenges. And one of the significant mental health challenges that people encounter is substance abuse, whether it's alcoholism or drug addiction. It's just
gambling.
Gambling,
but that's not food, substance, but I get it, right?
Sex and love. There's a lot of different forms of addiction manifests itself in many, many different ways, and it's a human problem. It's one of the oldest human problems. So alcoholism, you know, we talk about alcoholism. It's in the second parsha of the Torah. It's not, you know, I mean, alcohol abuse anyway, but But I'm saying it's not an undiscussed
plus,
problem.
Plus, we haven't as a community done that good a job discouraging alcohol use. We've done a decent job, I think, or maybe we've just been innocently standing by when it comes to drug use. But when it comes to alcohol use, and again, I don't know if this is a criticism or not, because it's a big part, obviously, of our ritual, etc.
Right.
We haven't done the greatest in terms of discouraging it from the next generation.
I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of alcohol, there's broad alcohol use in Judaism, and there's always going to be people that struggle to really moderate that. And there have been times and segments of the population that have almost encouraged it in a way that's destructive.
Right.
Another point is that the access and the normalization of marijuana uses like skyrocket in our community, like really skyrocket. And anyone who's not aware of that is just literally have dug their head in the sand.
Right.
And inherently some people will be okay with that. And a lot of people won't. And when you have such expanded normalized use of marijuana, particularly for young people, like that's going to manifest into problems as they get into young adulthood.
I find that the people who are ready to give it a pass, so to speak, are not nearly as educated on the topic as those who are more wary of it. That's what it seems to me. When I've heard rabbis really speak out against the marijuana use, they come very, very well prepared to the topic, at least the ones that I've heard on it. And I wish that, you know, for their sake, I wish those who encourage the recreational use had more, sources and backing for their position. But I don't see it. It just doesn't compute.
I mean, these things are nuanced. We have to be like careful about being too heavy handed with them and not being kind of commonsensical about it. But we also do need to be, like you're saying, to be educated about the awareness about like it's not something to be. We can't have our pants on fire about it. And at the same time, we need to be talking about it because people are facing it. We can't pretend it's not there. We can't pretend that in most, at least in the more left side of the right side of Judaism,
right,
that there's not rampant marijuana use amongst youth. Like it just is in all segments, in every types. And I'm not just talking about modern Orthodox or yeshivish. It's really it's across everywhere. The board. Right. People are experimenting with that. Right. And we're not talking about it. That's the biggest issue.
Right.
If we get really, really like crazy about it, you're going to lose a lot of people and you're going to try to like, you're going to make something a problem. You're going to make something a bigger problem than it is.
Right.
And that's going to become problematic. But if we don't talk about it and then the realities that emerge from that, we're just going to, you know, we're going to make the problem worse.
Menachem Poznanski is here. Okay, we're limited on time, obviously, but you're more than invited back at any point, especially if you have a major event that people can help donate to and keep your programs going. A couple of last things, though. How are we doing collectively? Ooh, sorry about that. How are we doing collectively as parents? You're in this for 20 years, which means 20 years ago, you probably could have made a responsible general statement about how parents handle these situations in our community. And I would guess today, 20 years later, you could probably make a responsible generalization, as much as we hate generalizations, about how we as parents are doing with this whole issue in our community. What would you say?
It's funny because I started this, I was, 24, 25 years old. I was very close in age to the people that I was serving. Today, that's obviously changed. The people that I'm serving are my kids' age.
You're the old man.
I'm the old man. So, and I'm a parent, and I've gone through the process of having teenagers, so my perspective has shifted. What I can say is that I think the Orthodox community really can get a very good grade on this overall. You know, there are definitely people that still struggle to get out of the way, but the movement of kind of like identifying when somebody's struggling, and parents much more quickly realize that, I'm not all parents, but many parents, much more than it used to be, that their child is struggling with an issue, and that doesn't need to be met with a negative response. It needs to be met with love and understanding, accountability, but also a measure of patience with the process.
And you would never veer from that advice, correct?
What's that?
Always love and compassion and understanding, and not, God forbid, a harsh response. You would encourage that in every situation.
I think the key to parenting, like most things in life, is trying to find that balance between being true to the reality of the circumstance, meaning being able to, let's say things matter-of-factly, but say them in a loving way. Right. And love is definitely like the part that you want to, like, if you have to err on the side of love or severity, you always want to err on the side of love.
Right. And what about the spouses? What about the men who might be married to women going through a situation like this, or the women who are married to men who are going through situations like this? How are they doing to cope with all of this in our community?
It's a very underserved population, to be honest. And it's people that are really struggling. It's very, very difficult for spouses that have a partner that are going through the process of addiction. The available resources are not in abundance. I mean, there's very few programs that are specifically targeting that population. Right. We've tried to make many efforts to do that. And on the whole, I think that it's really a tough spot, because, you know, different than a parent, when you're a spouse, there's a necessity oftentimes, particularly when there's children in the house, you have to think about the needs of your children. You have to think about the needs of your spouse, and you have to think about the needs of yourself. And you can't really afford to become over enmeshed with any three of those. And it's really like a very tough circumstance. It's actually a very, very difficult position to be in.
Yeah, tough.
And the wives and husbands that really navigate that really well are real heroes, actually. Really true heroes. Like,
amazing. A lot of work to be done out there, huh?
Thank God.
We have here TLRfamily.org. Would that be accurate or not?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
TLRfamily.org. If people want to donate, they should go to the OurPlaceNY.org website.
Either one of those websites.
Oh, either one.
A donate link, yeah.
TLRfamily.org gives you details about the living room. They have more than one location. It's not just New York. They have more than one location, five locations around the country, and they're servicing a lot of people with some very serious issues, and they are working very hard to give them the help they need, not just immediate help, but as you described, constant down the road help. That's the only way that people can be.
Yeah, we want to get them from getting out of treatment until at least 5 years of sobriety and building a life of recovery. That's our goal.
Wow.
Yeah, thank God.
You have to be very patient, and you have to be really good at what you do.
I mean, I'm very blessed. We get to watch people do remarkable things, resilient, amazing, strong, powerful people that are facing their challenges, and heroically building lives out of disaster. Really remarkable people. I am humbled every day.
My thanks to Menachem Poznanski. He's director of The Living Room, TLRfamily.org. Again, that's TLRfamily.org. We'll close out our Tuesday morning JMNAM coming up, if you keep it here at the Nahum Segal Network.